When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan MacLeod and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube live today, please hit the subscribe button below and the bell icon and never miss a live episode of this show. Right now, I'm pleased to welcome Luke Warner, co-founder and CEO of a company called IntegrateMe, which has just raised 32 million rand in a crowdfunding campaign. Luke, first of all, welcome to the podcast and thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me, Duncan.
So IntegrateMe describes itself as an emergent reg tech player. But what are you guys looking to create? I mean, you want to create a world where consumers no longer have to fill out a form. It sounds fantastic, but how does it work?
So effectively, if you tap a button, you get an Uber, or you Google something, happens instantly. We want you to be able to snap a QR code or tap a button and auto-complete your forms, validate them, and verify them. So you have one-tap onboarding. So you've got Discovery, which is a digital bank, or Zero Bank, or Rain as a telco. They don't have branches, and the world is moving towards remote onboarding. But does it have to be an hour process or a two-week process, or can it be a one-tap process? And we're making onboarding a one-tap process.
So take us through the mechanics of it. What technology have you developed to do this, and what are some of the regulatory challenges involved?
So when we started the business, we had the logo with three circles, and it was the person, the business, and the regulator. And the person didn't want to carry around forms and documents. The business wanted to onboard customers and de-risk them and make sure they didn't have defaults. And the regulators wanted to keep us safe from terrorism and money laundering and things like that. And fortunately, we only registered the business post-2016, so we had seen big database hacks and leaks. And so we saw these problems from the beginning. So we said, how can we balance what the man in the street wants, what the business wants, and what the regulator wants? Mm-hmm. So basically, the vision is never fill out a form again. We give users control of their identity and the ability to protect their personal information. And how we monetize that is by validating using machine learning and verifying using trusted source databases all that personal information so businesses can comply with the different regulations, which could be things like the KYC regulations, know your customer, for the financial services industry, that's FICO, the telco industry, that's RICO, or for the National Credit Act when purchasing things on credit, to things like the Consumer Protection Act to make sure there isn't predatory lending or identity theft and things like that. So it kind of all ties up. So the use case is tap a button, onboard instantly, and the revenue models depend on where people are filling out forms. It could be at a hospital, it could be at an airport, it could be at the traffic department, it could be for a bank account. We don't necessarily care why they're filling out the forms. We closely align ourselves to like a payment gateway. So if you think about PayPal, you fill out all your information once, it was protected, and you just say pay now, pay now, pay now. You don't say to Visa or MasterCard, but you're in the restaurant industry, and now you're in the food industry, now you're in the fashion industry, now you're in the petrol industry. It's payments. So payments and identity, or payments is a proxy for identity. Either I say, here's a $300,000, I'm going to buy this car cash, or I say, here's a whole bunch of documents, which mean that I'm good for it. You can establish trust and credibility, and I'll be able to service this debt on a monthly basis. And if I don't, you can come and knock on my door and renegotiate the contract with me. So that's what we do.
So take us through, Luke, some of the implementations you've done. What sort of companies have you done work with so far? Maybe take us through one or two examples of how you've implemented this technology in real world examples.
Cool. So it is interesting. So we decided to tackle the large banks and telcos, predominantly Standard Bank and MTN first. That was our vision, is these guys have got big fines. Standard Bank got the 60 million rand fine. MTN got the $5.2 billion fine for lack of RICO compliance in Nigeria. And so we said, cool, these guys have been fined. They have a budget. They know they have a problem. Let's go do remediation for the banks and telcos. And the use cases that we did pilots with was they would send out a text message to the client saying, either come to the branch with your documents, or click on this link and use Integrate Me from Home, where you can Fika from the couch or Rika from the couch. And that's how we started out. And then the procurement cycles were really long because it's your personal information and people need to make sure that we can keep it safe. Do we have penetration tests, security audits, governance processes, business continuity plans, and so on and so forth? So as we kept knocking on people's doors, we had to enter what was called the reception area, where they had like security guards and like at the boom gates and at the reception areas. And they had this little logbook where you would have to like fill out like your name, your surname, your phone number, and your ID number. And we used to write like Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck. And then we took a step back and we said, holy shit, this is a little application form where you verify a phone number, a car registration, an ID number, and like a guest. So we decided, well, we have to make our business succeed with or without these big contracts working. But we also want the vision of you can use Integrate Me everywhere in your day-to-day life. So we built an access control system, which was a use case of never fill out a form again. And we got that to like go live with Investic and Brawl. So they would send an email out. And then when you rocked up at the reception desk, they would send the email out. You'd verify yourself before you come to the building. And when you rocked up, the guard already knew. They saw a little picture of your face. And they could say, hey, Duncan, are you coming to see Luke upstairs on the second floor? Welcome. Come inside. Just snap the QR code to check in. Hmm. And I'll get a notification on my watch. Duncan's in the parking. Duncan's at reception. Then we lobbied for the traffic department because, again, it was a strategic purpose for us to renew car license discs. So for free, before we had integration with the traffic department, we just let you scan the disc and we pre-populated the form and we sent you an email notification when it expired. We said, here's the form. We've pre-populated as much of it as we can for you. Once we get integration, we'll let you know. And the strategic intent behind that was if you have a car, you likely finance the car, you would then need like insurance for the car, and you probably have a job and a bank account and a cell phone. So there's a high chance that you fill out a lot of forms on a regular basis, so you would feel the pain. Then we won a telco, a tender to self-reca a large telco's base, which was quite cool. And we won contracts with the courier industry. And they're all kind of like fed off each other. So when we delivered your car licenses to you, we realized that people had to fill out forms for the courier company. And now if a courier company is delivering a bank card to you or a cell phone, they ask you for Fika and Rika docs. And it can take like 2 weeks before that bank card gets to you. So one of our clients is Dawnwing, the courier group. And what they'll do is they'll send you a text message saying a bank card is going to be delivered to you. Please click on this link and Fika yourself. And then we'll dispatch the driver to you. And then what happens is you do the Fika process, selfie with the document, front back, OCR, barcode scanning, ping home affairs, proof of residence. And then they dispatch the driver to you, knowing that you are Fika compliant now. And then when the driver gets there, he takes a photo of your face and then says, cool, is this Duncan? Yes, what's your code? And then he leaves the parcel with you. So that was quite cool. And we've managed to secure another telco now. Actually, as we speak, the deal is... The commitment fees are busy being transferred. So we've also partnered with insurance aggregators. So if you think about like a Hippo or BetterBond, we've partnered with a company called Oakshire. So when you renew your car license disc, it will say, cool, this car is now 12 months old, which means your insurance premium should have dropped by 15%. We plug in the insurance aggregators and says, cool, here's 15 different providers. Which one do you want? But instead of like on Hippo, when you click, I want that one, and then somebody phones you, they speak to you for an hour, and they ask you information. When you click, it will say, cool, these are the information this person wants. Do you consent to pre-populate these forms and provide the docs? Now, mm-hmm. We've also partnered with a company called RicoMed. They're an online booking system for doctors. It's almost like you see the doctor's Google calendar and you can say, cool, I want a 9:15 appointment, and you book it online. You can do that after hours. It's one of their competitive advantages. And their business is going well. But when you do that online booking, Cindy will call you from the doctor and say, cool, you've got the appointment for 9:15. But when you get there, they'll say, cool, Duncan, here's a clipboard and a pen. Go sit in the corner for 20 minutes and fill out this form. So what we're doing is the same as we did with the traffic department before we went live with them, is we're saying, we will pre-populate this form for you and digitally sign the indemnity for you and send it to the doctor and send it to you. So when you get to the doctor's desk, you can say, no, Cindy, you've got my information. You can type it out the way you normally do. And then we said to him, if you want the paid version, we can give this to you digitally for maybe $5. And if you want to verify banking details or something, maybe another $10. So we're really making sure that we get in the day-to-day life of the person. So if they go to office parks, if they're getting stuff delivered or take a lot, if they're going to the visa office, they're going to the traffic department. We're busy working on making sure that we can vote. So part of the stuff that we're doing with the telcos is proof of liveness, voice recognition, proof of identity, proof of residence, proof of contact details. And that's what you need to register to vote or to put the different parties that you would pick. So we've got that technology already, and we're using it for self-RECA and self-FECA purposes. So we believe that provided we leverage the relationships in our network, that we could potentially allow people to register and vote in the next municipal elections. That's something internally that we're working towards.
Interesting. You must have had some very interesting conversations with regulators. Were they amenable to what you guys are doing here, or was it a bit of a fight?
They're very open-minded, but again, there's risk policy. So when you're doing something new, there's nobody to ask permission for. So if you think about the drones or the self-driving cars, it's something you kind of got to push first and then see how they respond. And then regulation it's there to protect people, but it generally regulation catches up quickly to the environment. So we were with people like the National Treasury, Banking Association of South Africa, SABRIC, Reserve Bank, and they're open. They've got their sandbox environments, but it's really you have to build something and you have to have a commercial case. So that people can adapt to it. If it's just an idea and it's just a PowerPoint presentation, it's much harder. So what we did with the banks and the telcos is we actually got proper legal opinions. So from like senior judge, senior counsel saying that this process is more thorough than your in-person process because you actually have an audit trail now, a face-to-face timestamp, who was the employee, what was going on. Whereas now most people in those verification roles are earning minimum wage. They're probably going to pop up on maternity leave or they're going to get a job. And then how do you know who actually sold that SIM card to somebody or who opened that bank account?
Right.
Whereas now you have proof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. Do you store client information yourself or do your clients continue to have management over client confidential information? And if you store it yourself, what security mechanisms have you put in place?
So we do store it, but in a sense, we're almost like WhatsApp, where we give you the tool, the end-to-end encrypted tool, to engage with the service provider. If you were already going to go to a shop and, let's say, get a Fashini account, you were already going to walk in there and say, I'll fill out your form and I'll give you all my documents. We're just saying, can you tap a button and then transfer them in a validated and verified state? So users can delete the information on our platform. They can update the information. They have an audit trail, like a history or activity log, a timeline of what they've done. But once they've transferred it to, say, for example, Fashini, just a fictitious name, it's now Fashini's responsibility as to how they store that information. We send it a snapshot in time, whereas on the integrated platform, it always updates in the background with the user's consent. So we link to like the traffic department, home affairs, the credit bureaus, and different trusted third-party sources of info. How we keep the information safe, it's all end-to-end encrypted. Our principle is everything is double opt-in, consent-driven. Things are stored in little microservices. And we really spend a large portion of our budget on penetration testing and security audits and making sure that our users' information is safe. It is our number one business risk. Our second business risk is false positives when people are registering their accounts. So we need to make sure we have an authentic onboarding process. But we believe that there's enough money to be made, a stupendous amount of money to be made in keeping the users' information safe, acting with consent, and making sure that they can protect their data. And so it's a profitable business model in itself in doing what's best for the person, what's best for the business, and what's best for the regulator. So balancing that ecosystem.
Tell me a bit about the team behind IntegrateMe. I believe that Herman Singh is a shareholder or a backer of the business. Herman Singh, of course, formerly executive at Standard Bank and more recently at MTN Group. Who else is behind the business and who are the shareholders?
So we've got a handful of about 15 shareholders, which were our angel investors before our crowdfunding round. One of the early guys which backed us and supported us as a social investor was Angus Brown, that was the founder of eBucks.
Oh, yes.
And my aunt invested. Two of my bosses from Standard Bank invested. My father-in-law invested. And then some of my founder's friends invested. And then we've got guys like Herman Singh and Ruben Goldberg. And then we got a private equity firm, a black female-owned private equity firm called Ocean on 76, which they've invested in 10 different platform businesses. One of the successful ones is called Rush. It's a courier aggregator. And we actually sold them as a client first, and they saw the value in being able to snap a QR code to send your Fika docs and have delegated authority to let other people collect parcels on your behalf, like your receptionist or your gardener or your wife. And then you get a notification saying your receptionist has collected your take-up parcel. And so they saw the value there, and so then their parent company invested in us.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the crowdfunding round, we have over 400 investors which have invested. So we've effectively attracted a lot more believers and supporters in what we're doing, but a lot more political clout and pull and influence and experience. So it was, I suppose, one of the hidden treasures is we didn't understand how much support, not just financially, but energetically and influentially, that we would attract. And so there's a lot more deals which will open up for us. The majority of the equity is actually owned by Black females. So although we were 37% Black owned, we'll move to 51%. Well, we were 37% Black owned and 30% Black female owned, but we'll now move to 51% Black female owned. So it will allow us to reduce our payment terms on some of our big contracts, and it will allow us to tender for some of the government business which we would love to do, like voting, like the traffic department, like Home Affairs, like SAA, like AXA, like the police department. Those are all forms that can be a one-tap, snap a QR code.
So let's talk a bit about this crowdfunding exercise that you did. You did it through a crowdfunding platform called Uprise Africa. I know a lot of startups watching or listening to the show will be a bit green with envy about what you've achieved here, and of course wanting to replicate your success in this regard. Firstly, did you consider more traditional forms of fundraising like venture capital, and why did you decide to go the crowdfunding route?
So there are multiple reasons. We'll have to unpack it. But I suppose with regards to venture capital, we had a bunch of term sheets from prominent investors. I would say the South African market is very confident on B2B investing, and they have a low risk appetite, and that's because their investors are looking for some form of surety. All smart guys. But for our business, because there was a big B2C element involved in it, they didn't have as much confidence in the predictions and models we were doing because it wasn't stuff they had seen before. Also, you can make a lot of money white labeling the solution, and you can make a lot of easy, sure, guaranteed, safe money white labeling the solution. But our vision was the man in the street must never fill out a form again. You should be able to tap a button and onboard instantly. So the biggest value of our platform is actually to the man in the street. Have all your information safe, secure, auto-updating, and have one-tap onboarding. So at the end of the day, we kept facing these things of, is there brand awareness? A large bank, say, for example, Discovery, would say, cool, if you've got 10 million users on your platform and it's a one-tap onboarding to get them life insurance or Vitality, done. But if I have to send my customer, my precious customer, into your ecosystem to sign up, no. So that's why we did access control, proof of courier, and the license screen. So how do we organically get people bottom-up onto our platform with or without a big institution? And it was this idea of how do we know we can trust the brand? How do we know the information will be safe? How do you know you have legitimacy and credibility? But having partners now like TransUnion and some of our big telco and bank clients and courier clients that we've won, we've passed those procurement channels, we've passed those security audits and pen tests and governance processes. So we feel that we have enough legitimacy now to come out and become a name brand. You Google something, you Uber somewhere. Now, if you see a form in front of you, you will say, integrate me. So when I was in Amsterdam, crowdfunding was a big thing. When I was in San Francisco, crowdfunding was a big thing. And I was like, this is the way to get market validation. This is the way to get the people. You need to align incentives. Who's going to benefit the most of the platform? That's the person who should own the platform, fund the platform. But it wasn't legal in South Africa until we met with Tabs. And we had a big deal on the table, a very lucrative deal, which we turned down in favor of doing a lower valuation with a crowd, because the bigger deal was a white label deal doing SIM cards throughout Africa. Just basically copying and pasting the telco model we had done across different telcos. But I would see Tabs and them, great team, great business model. But for entrepreneurs, I would say see them as a payment gateway. See them as Visa or MasterCard. If you have a restaurant, doesn't matter how fancy your credit card machine is, people won't buy your food. So if you don't have a great business, you don't have a great network, you don't have great traction, don't see crowdfunding as an easy way to milk money from society. Before you ask me for 30 minutes of my time and explain how it works, if you have a user base of loyal fans on like a Facebook or a waiting list or a mailer, I would say send a MailChimp mail out to your base. Say, hey, we're thinking about doing crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. Would you invest, yes or no? And if you would invest, how much would you invest? And then once, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000 people come back and say, yes, we would invest and cumulatively would invest 10 million bucks, then that's your easiest way of getting market validation of would the crowd invest in your business. Before you go and make your video and you put your whole pitch up and you go through the due diligence and the investment committees, you need to know that there are people that want to invest. So we knew people wanted to invest in us because every time we came out of a meeting, people would say, cool, I've got 100K or I've got 500K, can I give it to you? And I would say, I'm sorry, I can't take it because I have a governance process. And if it's less than $1 million, I can't afford to run my board cycles and my shareholder cycles and updating the CIPC and the share register. So very often we turned deals down. So we knew there was demand from our user base for the crowdfunding. So I think it's almost, maybe it looks too good to be true, but we've been around for 3 years. So you shouldn't listen to what I say. You should watch what I did. We were around for 3 years. We had more than 20,000 loyal users. We had a 5,000 list email list of all the customers, investors, suppliers, partners that we had engaged with over that three-year period. And we have 13 staff, probably 100 consultants in our business where their family and friends invested, and like our Uber drivers invested, our security guards, our cleaning ladies, our receptionists. So people which had we engaged with on our day-to-day basis, they believed in us as people and our optimism. So crowdfunding was a payment gateway where we could say, well, we can leverage this goodwill that we've created over the last 3 years, our network and our relationship, but also all of the awards and tractions and clients that we had done. We were selling the story of, we can succeed, we can overcome obstacles, and we can hit unrealistic milestones. This is what we've done over the 3 years. Now jump on board.
So you had a lot of commitment up front already. You knew before you even launched the crowdfunding exercise online that this was likely to be successful.
We had no idea how successful it was going to be. We thought it was going to be like a 60-day campaign of climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And we're like, okay, cool. We need to get 250,000 rand a day. And we're just going to do these cold calls. I printed out my full contact list on my phone and my WhatsApp list, my email list. And we thought it's going to be a campaign, but we had no idea that the demand was more than that. We thought that we could raise the 24 mil. Mm-hmm. And we thought that we were going to have to prepare to do a climbing of Mount Everest. So you can say, cool, I'm going to climb it. In your head, you know you're going to do it, but there's work.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we were prepared to do work. So it was the biggest gift to be given back a month of our life, to basically take a week of leave and then focus the other 3 weeks or 4 weeks on building the vision. Mm.
So the message is, if you're looking to crowdfund capital to grow your business, you're not just going to put a pretty video online and hope people come and invest. You need to do the hard graft behind the scenes.
So there's the view that money is attracted, it's not pursued. So you've got to be doing the right things. There's billions and trillions of dollars of money waiting to be deployed. People get paid money to invest money. But your business fundamentally needs to be right. Your team needs to be right. What you're planning to do needs to be right. So do those things right. And then you can just sample your user base. Just run a poll on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter just saying, hey, if we ran crowdfunding, would you invest? Yes. And if so, how much? And
yeah,
you will get an answer. I don't think you need to do a lot of work to get those answers. Yeah.
So you used a platform, a crowdfunding platform called Uprise Africa. Why did you choose them and who are they exactly?
To be frank, I didn't know who they were. We met at a conference. I related with a CEO as a founder. She said, cool, she has a platform and she issues shares. I sold her my business to Fika for her shares as a fellow entrepreneur. And then when I found out what she was doing, I was like, wow, this is available in South Africa. So incredible that it's legal. They have a framework and FSB license to do it. Effectively, it's as good as a payment gateway it was. So if you're running an e-commerce business and PayFast or PayPal or Visa or MasterCard came and said, we have a widget here, you're like, sweet, I can accept payments. But you're relying on how good is your business. So one of my favorite little proverbs is, if a bird is sitting on a tree on the branch, it's not worried about the branch snapping. Its faith and confidence is in its wings. Mm. So I think there is this perception that you can quickly just milk crowdfunding and it's an easy way to take money from the crowd. No, there's if we show you the analytics of the money we raised, everyone was within our one or two steps of our network. And so the accountability is really you're socially accountable to your community and your network. So if they believe in you, you now have a much bigger responsibility to them.
So you mentioned about 400 people invested. Is that the number you said?
It's 402 was the last I looked at it.
Okay. And it's a minimum commitment of 1,000 Rand and a maximum commitment of 5 million. Did anyone put 5 million
down? Yeah, we had about five millions.
Wow.
We had a couple of millions. Yeah, it was so cool. We didn't expect it. It was really cool. And it was just people which they said, again, our user base, where we were like, cool, you've used our technology, you've checked it, you've had the wow moment, would you like to invest in this tech? But ultimately, they invested in us as people. So we had a very successful launch party, which I think would be key, where we did a private launch to our WhatsApp list for 2 weeks beforehand.
Yeah.
And we got about 120 investors before that. And then we had about 250 people at our launch party. And then we used that time not to sell the technicalities of the business, but to sell our emotional stories as founders to show that it's normal for us to overcome unrealistic odds. It's normal for us to overcome adversity and challenges. And so it doesn't matter what comes our way. It's normal for us. We will find a way to succeed. And so people bought into the emotional story. They always say you shouldn't invest in a business. You should invest in people. Basically, people bought the founders' shares in the founders' energy and the founders' vision. And so literally everyone in that room made us the first 27 mil. And so we sold out 27 mil in the first 72 hours. Wow. And then after that, there was just a frenzy of people trying to jump on and grab the last amount. I think if you look on the site now, it says 32,409,000. So there will have to be some refunds where people all just came in. There was like 100 people came in on the last day, like before 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And because there was a lot of EFTs, the credit cards and the instant EFT reflect immediately, but the EFTs, it's a manual process. So there's a bit of backlog for them to sort out.
Right. So the people who've invested through this crowdfunding exercise, they get equity in the company now, do they?
Do they get direct equity? Yeah. So Uprise Africa will own a 25% stake in Integrate Me and have an independent board member, Brenda Carley, the CEO of Conscious Companies. She'll be representing the crowd. And yeah, effectively they have direct exposure to all the upside of the business, but their voting rights and things are ceded to that independent board member.
I see. So Uprise Africa owns the stake on behalf of the people who invested in the initiative.
Correct. And I think they manage it for about 12 months or so, and then they give it to us. But fortunately, they've got automated technology for the share registers and the certificates and the reporting. So yeah, effectively, they'll have direct exposure to Integrate Me.
Mm.
And they'll be on our cap table.
You mentioned that a large chunk of the investors who came on board were black women. How did that come about?
Correct. I think maybe it's we spent a lot of time with our Uber drivers and our domestic ladies and our security guards and our receptionists. But they used our technology and they're like, sweet, I can get my licenses renewed. Or your visitor management system was amazing. So it was pleasant for us because we actually thought that we were so proud that we managed to get 30% black female ownership in our one private equity deal. And then we're like, damn, this crowdfunding is going to dilute that potentially down to 22%. And like we had signed agreements to become BE level 2. And so it was a concern. So it was just, again, a miracle from the universe that it actually ended up swinging way better than we could ever have imagined it. So I think that's the beauty of opening it up to the crowd is if you're focusing on one or two high net worth individuals, you're kind of going for a specific target. But if you open up to the crowd, more great things than you could imagine become available to you.
So you've raised 32 million Rand. What are you going to use it to do?
Yeah. We're going to use it to focus on our vision, what we set out to do, enable people to never fill out a form again, but also to enable businesses to never fill out a form again. So if you think about a payment gateway like a PayPal, it's a module in your customer journey. So we want to position ourselves as a verified personal information gateway. So as a new business, you should not build onboarding. You should not build forms. You should not, even if they're digital forms or verification, you should just plug Integrate Me in as a little box and then a payment gateway in as a little box. And you focus on your DNA and what you're good at. So we, at the moment, our procurement process is that we have too much demand and we don't have an automated procurement process. So if you want to access Office 365, you don't speak to Bill Gates for 9 months negotiating. You go to his website, you put in your credit card details, you accept his T's and C's, and you get the service. Mm. So we want our onboarding for businesses to be less than 3 minutes. And that's what we're working towards. So it will also give us the luxury to say no to a lot of things. I mean, I sold my car last year to pay salaries 1 month. So often we've been taking on some of these custom dev work, white label jobs, so that you can keep the dream and the vision alive. Whereas mm-hmm. now we've got about 24 months of cash. We've got enough cash to get us to profitability. So we can literally say, laser focus, this is our vision. And if somebody asks for something, I say, please join the waiting list. We're excited to help you. Or I'm sorry, this doesn't align to our roadmap, but here's 6 competitors which can do a great job for you. Whereas before we were in this awkward situation of, God, I've got to pay salaries next month. I'll just take this on so that I don't have to let people go. So it's an amazing blessing, and we're really grateful. And it's also a big responsibility to make sure that we give people the returns. We forecasted 88x returns over the next 5-year period, and people say that's a lot. It is a lot, but our business is very much more like WhatsApp than it is a KFC. WhatsApp spins up another 10 million users. Maybe they hire 2 staff and some servers. KFC spins up another 100 stores. They need the physical storefront, the bricks and mortar, the chicken, the staff. So our business is, the nice thing about a tech scalable business is as you scale, you have near zero marginal costs, meaning that your profits increase a ton faster than your costs do.
Luke Warner is a co-founder and CEO of IntegrateMe. Thanks so much for joining us on the Tech Central podcast.